Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. And the host of the program, its founder and guiding light, is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she is a champion in the battle against ageism. On today's program, she'll be talking with David Boies and Theodore B. Olson, two of the country's most prominent lawyers, litigating some of the highest-profile cases in recent history, including Bush versus Gore, where they argued on opposite sides all the way to the Supreme Court. Well, they went on to become friends, and they're on the program today. You'll hear all about that. Interesting, interesting stuff indeed. But let's kick the program off now, again, with Carol Marks in the interviewer's seat, talking with Richard Ravitch. He built some of New York's most notable buildings, cleaned up its most notorious public transportation agency, helped the city escape financial ruin, and served as lieutenant governor under David Paterson in the wake of the Elliott Spitzer scandal. He talks to Carol about his new memoir titled So Much to Do, A Full Life of Business, Politics, and Confronting Fiscal Crisis, published by Public Affairs.
Now, before we get started on some of the amazing things you've done that have made people like the late mayor of New York City, Edward Koch, call you the Renaissance man, why did you quote Plato at the beginning of your book? And what did he have to say about politics, and why is it so important that what he said so long ago that we remember it?
You know, that's the smartest question I've been asked, and I've been interviewed a lot. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Because every day one reads in the papers, one hears at dinner parties, one goes to various organizational meetings, and one hears complaints about the government's failing to function, the government's failing to do this, the government's failing to do that. And everybody blames the politicians. If they're right-wing Republicans, they blame Obama. And if they're Obama Democrats, they blame the right-wing Republicans. But the truth of the matter is political participation is diminishing. And that's why what Plato's fundamental assertion that if you're not prepared to engage in politics, you deserve to be governed by inferior people, everybody in the United States has to be reminded of it. And if you don't like what's going on, and I don't, then you got to do something about it. But the only way you could do something about it in this democratic system of ours is to get engaged in politics, support people for elective office who believe in what you believe in, and fight for them, and help them raise money, and do the things that are necessary, and stay in touch with them after they're elected. Make sure they're accountable for the votes they take and the decisions they make.
And, you know, I'm so glad you said that in your book and that we have brought it up again on the show. It's vital. Now, when it comes to learning about your life and your beliefs, you said that when you went to college at Columbia University, that really impacted your personal political beliefs. In what way?
Well, you know, in the early 50s, there, young people weren't that active in politics as a general rule because Senator Joe McCarthy was accusing every liberal of being a communist, and that sort of discouraged political participation. And second of all, we had a lot of unfinished agenda following World War II. We still had a segregated country, and we had a lot of no health care system, really. And there was a great deal of concern and anger and on the part of some people, as well as passivity on the part of others. But what I learned at Columbia that was so invaluable, which was really the same lesson that Plato taught, was that in democracy, ideology, intense ideology, is not the answer to solve problems. It's collegiality, it's compromise, it's the mundaneness of everyday life that ultimately makes people work better. And that's what George Orwell described in his famous book about Homage to Catalonia, when he went there to fight for the Republicans and found out that the left was as vicious as the fascist right. And he extolled the virtues of people who weren't really very present in the Spanish Civil War, and those were the people who believed in the democratic process, not in war, not in violence, not in ideological extremes. So these were the things that were part of the curriculum of the faculty, of Trilling and Barzin and Hofstadter and Commager and Luchtenberg and some of the great academic of that century, actually.
Now, perhaps you're best known for the work you did as a power broker and financial guru when you were key advisor to then-Governor Hugh Carey and helped in rescuing New York from that horrible fiscal crisis it faced in 1975. What were some of the problems it was facing then, and gosh, doesn't it seem like we're facing the same problems now?
Well, you're right again. The main problem was that New York City had covered its deficits for the previous 8 years by borrowing money. Decisions made by the mayors and the governor and the entire political process. It was easier to borrow than it was to tax, and it was easier to borrow than it was to cut, so they borrowed. And finally, in 1975, the banks got terrified of their potential liabilities for issuing more securities for which there was no reasonable prospect of repaying out of revenues, and they said they would no longer fund the city's deficits, and that created the fiscal crisis. The other problems were that Governor Rockefeller had come up with some very clever devices to borrow money to solve public problems. His heart was in the right place. His goals were commendable. He wanted to build housing for the poor and universities for the poor. But the method of financing it wasn't terribly sound and based on moral obligations instead of contractual obligations, and that got the state into trouble as well. So Hugh Carey was, in many ways, the most extraordinary public official I've ever had the honor of knowing, let alone working with, and he took at great risk, political risk to himself. He faced all those problems head on and did unpopular things. He raised taxes, he cut services, he did everything that was necessary, and he ultimately persuaded the President of the United States to participate as well.
So, you know, it was really amazing because, as you said in your book, almost before, or very shortly before, all these groups decided that they would do something to be helpful, they had said that they would never do these things. So to bring them together, that was amazing.
It really was, and it was an honor to have participated in that and worked closely with the governor during that period.
Now, you've said that one of the problems they had back then, and we certainly have now, that the states, our cities are facing, it has to do with Medicaid and pensions and getting a handle on that. What do you think we can do? Again, compromise?
Those weren't problems in the 70s, first of all. The pension issue wasn't even on the table.
On the
screen at that point.
Right.
I mean, because it was only fairly recently that public employees bargained collectively for their benefits. And Medicaid was relatively benign in terms of cost at that point. Nobody ever imagined that we would reach the point, which we did in 2014, of having over $800 billion spent on Medicaid in the United States. So half of it by the federal government and half by states. So what's happened basically is that retirement obligations, contractual obligations, in some cases statutory obligations, plus the cost of Medicaid, a program that people complain about but no politician is willing to terminate, and it's within the power of any state to terminate it if they want, but nobody would for good and proper reasons because it's the only way the poor are able to afford health care. Those costs are rising much faster than state and local revenues. and therefore states and cities are facing deficits, which they're addressing in several ways, none of which is particularly good in my view, and all of which have consequences. So, for example, they are cutting aid to education. There are 300,000 fewer teachers in the United States than there were 10 years ago. That in and of itself is the most compelling fact I can offer. If you want to disinvest in the future of the United States, I can't think of a better way of doing it. Second of all, we're spending less on replacing our infrastructure than we should. Nobody disagrees with that. Nobody says we're spending enough. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO all share, they agree on nothing else, but they agree on the fact that we should be spending more on infrastructure. So states and cities are cutting necessary investments in the future in order to fund past promises, and this is not a sustainable course.
Richard Ravitch in conversation with Carol Marx. His memoir is titled So Much to Do, A Full Life of Business Politics and Confronting Fiscal Crisis, published by Public Affairs. Carol Marx returns in conversation with attorneys David Boies and Theodore B. Olson. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
Did you know? An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it. Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we continue now with Carol Marx in conversation with attorneys David Boies and Theodore B. Olson. They're two of the country's most prominent lawyers, litigating some of the highest-profile cases in recent history, including Bush versus Gore, where they argued on opposite sides all the way to the Supreme Court. They joined forces in the lawsuit Hollingsworth versus Perry to combat California's Proposition 8, reinstating the freedom to same-sex marriage. They'll talk about their new book with Carol. It's titled Redeeming the Dream, The Case for Marriage Equality, published by Viking.
Now I'm going to start out with Ted Olson, and you were involved in the very important Supreme Court case with George Bush. And on the other side was David Boise, who I'll be talking to in a minute. And the court wound up ruling 5-4 in Bush's favor. So I understand, Ted, that you really didn't know David that well during the trial, but you did become very friendly with him. And what's made that personal relationship grow and develop over time?
I respect David enormously. I think he's pretty well recognized as the finest lawyer in the country in the courtroom. When we became friends after Bush versus Gore, think it was fair to say, out of mutual respect, but we developed an affection. Our wives are prominent, successful lawyers as well. We enjoy one another's company. And the friendship just grew stronger over the years. When I was first contacted about the Proposition 8 case, the California constitutional amendment that denied marriage equality to gay and lesbian citizens, because I was recognized as someone who had represented George Bush, I thought it would be great for David and I to present this case together so that the American people would see it as not a partisan issue, but an issue that envelops all of us all across the political spectrum. And we were encouraging the courts and thus the people to think about this as a human rights issue, as an issue that has constitutional foundation, and that we should all agree that it's right to recognize the decency and individual liberties of our gay and lesbian brothers and sisters.
Well said. And David Boyce, when Ted called you in the spring of 2009 and asked if you would be interested in bringing a federal lawsuit challenging Proposition 8 as unconstitutional, can you give us a couple of the reasons behind your immediate yes response?
Absolutely. I recognize this as the defining civil rights issue of the current quarter century. Many years ago, in the 1960s, I worked in Mississippi for what I considered to be, at the time, the defining civil rights issue of that generation, which was the racial divide. And here, I thought that we had the same kind of discrimination, this time against gay and lesbian citizens. And one of the reasons that we wrote the book that we did, that we're talking about, is to try to tell the American people about not only the case that we brought and how we won it, which is, I think, an exciting story in itself, but also to try to convey to the American people how this issue fits into the broader civil rights context, how this shows the way our country has moved over many decades towards the ideals that our founders had but didn't always practice, and that is of true equality among citizens. And so this was, for me, an opportunity to continue really a lifelong interest in civil
rights. That gets back to something that I hadn't realized until I read your book, the importance of a case that had been ruled on by the Supreme Court many years before the new one came up, and that was Loving versus Virginia. And I hadn't realized what bearing that case had on the one that you and Ted argued.
Yes. Loving versus Virginia was decided in 1967 by a unanimous Supreme Court, striking down Virginia's laws and the laws of 16 other states that prohibited marriage between persons of different races. The Supreme Court in that case talked about how important marriage was to individuals in their lives and the relationship of individuals to be able to come together as a matter of liberty, association, privacy, and the Supreme Court called marriage the most fundamental right that we have, older than the Constitution, older than the Bill of Rights, older than political parties. And to deny that right to people because of race or because of the fact that they wanted to marry someone of another race, it would have at that time prohibited the president's mother and father from being married in Virginia. They would have been guilty of a felony. Well, the Supreme Court struck that down, and in subsequent cases, the Supreme Court said it's not just a racial issue. It's a matter of marriage and freedom and liberty. And so that case is very important to the marriage equality issue. It's not a matter of opposite race marriage or same-sex marriage. It's a matter of marriage, and is marriage going to be denied because of the race of the person you choose to marry, or is it going to be denied because of the sex of the person that you choose to be married? And the answer to both of those questions is the same. No, we don't discriminate. We don't put a box around people because of their race or their sexual orientation and deny them access to fundamental rights.
Now, David Boies, I want to ask you this. You are known as a wonderful, effective trial lawyer, and of course, you were working with the plaintiffs in the case. What disadvantage do the plaintiffs have, and how did, say, two of them really perform and do well on the stand, Chris and Sandy? What made them work so well for their case?
I think what really gave power to their testimony was how natural and forthcoming, how honest, and just what wonderful people they are. One of the things we did was we put all four plaintiffs on the stand as our first four witnesses. And we asked them basic questions about who they were, how they felt, how discrimination had affected their lives, what their lives would have been like if they hadn't faced this discrimination, who they wanted to marry, why they wanted to marry that person, what they thought of that person. And that testimony was the most powerful testimony in the entire trial. There was not a dry eye in the courtroom, and I include the lawyers on the other side after these people testified. And even the lawyers on the other side have testified about what wonderful human beings these plaintiffs were and how you could not listen to them. You could not listen to the pain and the damage that discrimination was causing them and the children that they were raising without hoping that that discrimination would end. There's a documentary, HBO has a documentary that came out last Monday and is still available online that talks about the case. And you see these plaintiffs in the flesh. And one of the things we tried to do in our book was to convey who these people were and how powerful that testimony was. It was really a very dramatic moment in the courtroom when they talked about who they loved and why they wanted to get married and how important marriage was to them.
Attorneys David Boies and Theodore B. Olson in conversation with Carol Marks. Their book is titled Redeeming the Dream, The Case for Marriage Equality, published by Viking. I'm Michael Harrison. Coming up next, we'll talk with Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. And later in the program, we'll be joined by our senior correspondent, Stephen J.J. Wiseman, who'll be discussing the Senate's dealing with the grandparent scams. That and more coming your way when A Touch of Gray continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined at this point in the program by our senior correspondent, and he is also the vice president and executive editor of Talkers Magazine and Radio Info, two trades that serve the radio industry, trade publications. His name is Kevin Casey. And Kevin, looking at the talk radio side, what are people talking about that would be interesting to our 50-plus constituency?
Well, among the topics that are being discussed, a number of global issues, the situation with Russia and the Ukraine, the downing of the airplane, some of the instability going on in Africa and in Europe, the reported rises in incidences of anti-Semitism. And one of the questions that's being tossed about is the world headed for a larger war? I mean, I hesitate to say a world war, but a conflict that spans multiple countries. And people who remember the run-up to World War II, not many around that remember the run-up to World War I, but looking back at it historically, the question is being asked, are we in a similar situation where there are so many conflicts across Asia and Europe and in Africa, and then even the border issues between Central America and the United States? And is this something that's going to lead to a global conflict of some sort? And if possible, then what can be done to prevent it? What have we learned from history?
It's a move to Mars. The you know, it's funny, and you didn't even mention in all of that Gaza and Israel. The
Yes, you're right. I completely forgot that, but obviously that's a huge part of it as well.
Somebody said to me the other day, they said, it feels like we're heading toward World War III. Do you think we're on the verge of World War III? And you know what my answer was? My answer was, we've been in World War III for several decades now, and let's hope it doesn't end with a bang.
Well, now, when you say that, do you mean we've been in World War III, or do you think we've been in another version of the Cold War?
No, I think we've been in World War III. I think that this is World War III. We've been in it for decades. We've been in World War III for about 20 years, maybe more. And it's people are dying, they're fighting, there are battles. There's nothing happening today that didn't happen 10 years ago or 15 years ago. There was the Persian Gulf War I, the Persian Gulf War II, the invasion of Iraq, Clinton sending people into Bosnia-Herzegovina, the genocides in Africa. How many times in the last 20 years have the Palestinians and the Israelis had a heightened conflict going on? Russia has had its situation, and of course the terrorist situation, the United States and Al-Qaeda, the downing of the World Trade Center, one of the biggest attacks on American soil ever. The biggest attack on American soil in terms of the 48 states, Pearl Harbor was the one before that. We've been at war for a long time, and my hope is it doesn't end in a big bang. I hope it somehow peters out, but sometimes you get so close to something, you don't see it for what it is. History will show World War I and World War II as the great world war that had two parts, by the way, as we're starting to get further from that. But you bring up a good point, and certainly I could see where people would be asking that question on talk radio. Kevin Casey joins us every week. He is the vice president and executive editor of the trade publications Talkers and Radio Info. You can go to Talkers to see what's going on in talk radio at talkers.com. Interested in music? Music Radio is represented at radioinfo.com. Thank you, Kevin. I'm Michael Harrison. Stephen J.J. Wiseman's next when A Touch of Grey continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups. for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And now for the rest of the way, we're going to be joined by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. He'll be talking with Paul Irving. Paul Irving is the president of the Milken Institute, a nonpartisan think tank dedicated to improving public health and aging across America. He's going to talk to Stephen about his new book, The Upside of Aging, How Long Life is Changing the World of Health, Work, Innovation, Policy, and Purpose, published by Wiley.
You know, just the title itself gave me a smile, because as an aging baby boomer, it seems that every day I'm finding out one of the downsides of aging. And in fact, there are, but this book was a very positive book. So what are some of the major upsides?
Well, so Steve, let me start by saying your reaction is the reaction I'm getting from a lot of people. I in no way trivialize the challenges of aging. I'm like you, I'm a boomer, and we all have aches and pains. I've had hair loss and various other things, have some wrinkles. But the point is that there's a lot more to life than I think oftentimes we assume about our later years. So the reason I wrote the book just very quickly is, you know, in the last 100 years, science has added roughly a doubling to our lives. So the scientists have done their work, and they've done a fabulous job through advances in medicine and sanitation and the like. But what we really haven't figured out what to do is, how to address is what are we going to do with this extra time? So one of the things I think that motivated me to do the book was to think about the potential of older people, this extraordinary asset that I think is underutilized in many respects, and I think many, many others share that view. And we believe that there's great potential not only to improve our own lives, to improve aging lives, but to improve society as well.
And one of the things I really liked about the book was it was not a denial of aging and certain parts. Absolutely, there are downsides. But it was an acceptance of the things that we can change and adapting the things that we can into a whole new world. And one of the things is the aging brain. And in fact, after hearing, you know, so many times we just keep hearing the threat. I always remember going to a George Carlin concert, and he said, yes, how many of you get up, you're going into another room, you get into the other room, and you forget why you got there, and just one word hits your mind, Alzheimer's, and the entire crowd went crazy with it, because we've all done that. But in fact, and one of the things I liked was, you were talking in the book about, in some ways, the aging brain is better. How is it a better brain?
Well, look, Alzheimer's is a terrible, terrible disease that affects not just sufferers but families, and it's something that we absolutely have to deal with. And for those who don't have Alzheimer's, many of us suffer some kind of short-term memory loss. It's a natural occurrence in age. But there's an upside, and the upside is that we all, I think, understand instinctively, those of us who are older, that we have this stuff called experience, wisdom, judgment, the ability to problem solve in multidisciplinary ways, the ability to see across sectors, across barriers for solutions. But while we think of senior moments, that's the the pejorative description as kind of a hard reality of aging. We think of these other things as soft. Well, the reality is they're not soft. They're actually measurable. And the truth of the matter is that a 65-year-old or a 70-year-old may well have stronger problem-solving abilities and more nuanced analytical faculties than a 30-year-old who, frankly, may have stronger short-term memory and a higher level of energy than the older person. So one of the things I think people are realizing is that maybe these skills between generations are actually complementary. So rather than a business, a really creative, advanced thinking business, having two really smart 30-year-olds in a room taking on a problem, or some other business having two really smart 65-year-olds in a room trying to take on a problem, that maybe actually the best combination for solving that problem or creating that opportunity is to combine the 65-year-old and the 30-year-old to have this wonderful complement of skills.
Yeah, it's fascinating because it does seem to invite a collaboration between the generations. The world needs to adapt to the needs and skills of older people, and certainly a lot of us are not retiring as early as we once did, sometimes because we need the money, other times because we just like doing it and it feels good. What kinds of changes does the business world need to do to adapt to this situation?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there are some obvious barriers. Obvious barriers include really ridiculous notions like mandatory retirement provisions. You and I both know that there are 75-year-olds who are extraordinarily energetic and talented and skilled and motivated, and there are 40-year-olds who aren't. So the notion of treating older people as this homogeneous mass is no less absurd than treating women or people of color or any group as if they're all the same. Older people are different from younger people, but they're also different from each other. So for some people, lifelong work will be an opportunity and should be, and there should be no barriers about that. And so I think we have to talk openly about bias. I think many of us associate some of the physical attributes of aging with loss of capacity, loss of potential. It's just not true. Now, by the way, again, this is not to suggest that things are easy for everyone or that everyone will be able to take advantage of a more open world to aging workers, but at least what we have to do is remove arbitrary barriers and then let people engage, compete, participate, as we do with all other members of our society, or certainly should.
One of the things that I've found fascinating, and over the years, in a numbers game as far as investing, and maybe self-centered, but I always thought follow the boomers because there were just so many of us. And we're still a giant part of the population, not just here but around the world. What does it mean to the world economies as we have baby boomers aging?
That's a fantastic question. And boy, oh boy, you are ahead of your time. So this is not just true in America. As you know, we have about 78 million boomers in America, about 10,000 a day turning 65. But the United States, as rapidly as we're aging, is actually well behind a number of other countries. Japan, the oldest large and developed country in the world, aging throughout Europe, negative population growth in parts of the world, and even in China as a result of the one-child policy for many years. So the world overall is aging, and this is not just a baby boom phenomenon. This is a forever phenomenon. Reduced birth rates and increased longevity mean that the balance of people, the shift in age, this demographic phenomenon, will really be a permanent state of human affairs. So what that means is really smart companies and really smart investors, and it sounds like you're one, are thinking about how to take advantage of what I call the longevity economy, this great opportunity for innovation and for new products and services to serve an older population. It's an under-recognized opportunity, and I think increasingly people will become aware that this is a great, great place for investment. One of the things that I think we're looking for throughout the Western world, certainly in the United States and again in Europe and other places, is economic growth. And we all know that economic growth occurs at the intersection of innovation and demographic change. And there is no place where that's occurring or where that's as much of an opportunity in the world as is the case with aging.
That's Paul Irving in conversation with Steve Wiseman. His book is titled The Upside of Aging, How Long Life is Changing the World of Health, Work, Innovation, Policy, and Purpose, published by Wiley. More words with Steve Wiseman when A Touch of Gray continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor seat, and we come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and joined again by Steve Wiseman. Steve is an attorney, and he is a writer of a number of books that deal with topics that are of great importance to us, such as The Truth About Avoiding Scams, and the forthcoming book, Identity Crisis Alert, both published by Prentice Hall. His website is called scamicide.com. Steve is here now to discuss how the Senate is dealing with grandparent scams. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, recently the Senate Special Committee on Aging held a hearing on the infamous grandparent scam. We're all aware of that. It occurs a scammer calls an elderly person posing as a grandchild who's been involved in some sort of emergency and needs the grandparent to wire money to them right away. Of course, whenever anyone asks to wire money, you should always be a little bit skeptical. One 80-year-old witness at the Senate hearing spoke about receiving this kind of a call. They come in late at night when people are disoriented. The call came from someone purporting to be his grandson who needed bail money after allegedly being arrested on a drug charge. Now, in response to the call, the witness testified how he purchased a $7,000 prepaid money card and then gave this card information to the scammer on the phone, who's been never heard from again. It was only afterwards the unfortunate witness was able to reach his grandson on his cell phone to learn the entire matter had been a scam. Now, the Senate Special Committee on Aging has in recent years focused a lot of attention on scams preying upon older Americans, such as the Jamaican lottery scam, income tax scams, Social Security scams, and Medicare fraud. But the grandparent scam keeps on coming up, and there are a lot of reasons for it. One reason is the scammers are often able to get information and names, believe it or not, through obituaries. And so you want to be careful about the information that you provide in an obituary. Certainly, never wire money or send money with a prepaid card unless you're absolutely sure about to whom you're wiring the money or sending the card and that it's not a scam. You know, if it's a claim about a medical or a legal emergency, contact the hospital. Contact the legal authorities in the area to confirm that the information is accurate. Make sure you have the cell phone numbers of children, grandchildren, as well as anyone with whom your child or grandchild might be traveling so you can confirm any calls claiming an emergency has arisen. And in point of fact, call the child directly on his or her cell phone to confirm the story. Now, interestingly enough, students traveling abroad should register with the State Department's Smart Traveler Enrollment Program at travelregistration.state.gov/IBRS/UI. And this program can help with communications in an emergency situation. Keeping a cool head is always the best thing to do. And another good thing to do is to consider protecting yourself. Look into my new book, Identity Theft Alert, which is just out now. You can find it on Amazon or at my blog, scamicide.com.
Thank you, Steve Wiseman. Again, make sure you visit scamicide.com and keep an eye open for the book. I think it's just coming out right now. It might be available at Amazon. It's called Identity Theft Alert by Steve Wiseman, published by Prentice Hall. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Thank you, Beverly Santanello. Thank you to everybody involved in the program's production, and certainly a big thank you to Carol Marks, the host of the program. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.